This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Our opening guests today are Jack and Meg White of the duo The White Stripes. They just released their new, much-anticipated CD, Icky Thump. It's their sixth studio album, their first for a major label, and many critics are raving about it. Here's the title track. That's the title track from Icky Thump, the new CD from the White Stripes. The White Stripes formed in 1997. Although they're eccentric enough to have remained an indie band with a cult following, they've actually developed a large following. Their single, Seven Nation Army, from their earlier CD, Elephant, won the Best Alternative Music Grammy. Jack White wrote several songs on the bluegrass soundtrack for Cold Mountain and had a small part in the film. He also produced a CD by Loretta Lynn, called Van Leer Rose, which won a Grammy in 2005 for Best Country Album. Jack and Meg White don't talk publicly about their relationship to each other, and still coyly suggest they're brother and sister, though many press reports describe them as divorced. As Rolling Stone said earlier this week, being in the White Stripes involves following a lot of rules. No admitting you aren't related, no dressing outside the code, no playing with other people, no bass. Terry spoke with Jack and Meg White in 2005 following the release of their CD, Get Behind Me, Satan.
How did you both start playing together?
We started I was just playing in the attic, and Meg sort of came up there, and I said, hey, get behind the drums. And, you know, I remember the first thing we would just play together sort of as a lark. We did Moon Age Daydream by David Bowie, and because Meg wanted to do that. She was really into that song at the time. And I have a recording of that, actually, still. I found it recently. And it just felt really good right off the bat. It just felt like something was different. And I think the reason why is because Meg's sort of childishness behind the drums really brought some new character to playing a song like that. And we started to play more and more, and it became this thing where, I forget who it was, I guess it was Picasso maybe, who said that he spent his whole life learning, took his whole life to learn how to paint like a 5-year-old. I'm not sure if it was him who said that, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's how I felt about Meg. She's painting like a 5-year-old, she's playing like a 5-year-old. She's playing drums just like a little child, and I wish I could do that. I wish I could play the guitar like a little child, you know.
Now, Jack, you play drums. That was your first instrument before a guitar. And,
that's right.
From what I've read, it sounds like you used to record drums and guitar when you would record stuff in your room. So when Meg started playing drums, did you want her to sound at all like you sounded, or were you looking for something completely different?
No, that was what struck me. I mean, it started at sort of as that lark thing with just sort of messing around, you know, and then it became something beautiful very, very quickly. And it became like, wow. And so I didn't want Meg to play proficiently at all, no. And matter of fact, I said, please don't practice, you know. Please don't play by yourself because it's just going to ruin it, you know.
So, Meg, now that you've been playing for several years, have you become more proficient in spite of Jack's urgings?
I suppose a little bit, yes. It's still probably not on the level of, any of the classic amazing drummers, but, probably better, certainly better than I was then.
And Jack, is that ruining things for you?
No, I think she keeps it tethered on it. You know, she really keeps the whole band, the two of us, you know, she keeps the band anchored.
Okay, so you're from Detroit and you're interested in in blues, in rock, in obviously you've listened to a lot of punk and heavy metal too, in mountain music. So you have all these influences that, you know, it's easy for us to hear in your recordings. Did you go through a period of not only asking yourself whether you could play the blues being white, but if you could play mountain music being from Detroit, or play early rock and roll because you grew up in the 70s and 80s? I mean, did every step you turn lead you to questions about, am I authentic enough? Or did you early on just decide, well, you know, I love it. It doesn't really matter whether I grew up then or I lived there or whatever.
We had a good experience in the White Stripes because we started off at the sort of whatever the lowest level you could of just, you know, playing at the Gold Dollar Bar, which is like a block from where we're sitting right now, which was this little local scene. Garage rock was happening. We're just, you know, warming up for the bands and, you know, gradually getting to play out of town in Toledo or Chicago, you know, whatever. We just sort of built it up from the absolutely nothing. And then that kind of showed, you know, me, because people really liked us in Detroit and embraced us immediately, which was really surprising. And, you know, we were like their secret band. And then we were the, you know, secret band of like people in Chicago or whatever, you know what I mean? We just kind of kept going on. And we started to learn this thing that no matter what you did, you know, some people were really going to like it, and some people were really not going to like it. And some people were going to like it for the wrong reasons. Like, it's part of their identity to have a secret band that they, you know, it becomes part of their personality. And once you get more popular, they don't want to be a part of you anymore because they don't like it for the music's sake. They like it for other reasons. So that kind of taught me early on that, you know, I can't think about that anymore. You know, I can't concern myself with that. That's just too cool, you know, or too cool for me. I mean, I can't. I mean, I love mountain music, and I'm going to play it, and I can't think about if it's going to fit with what we're doing or not. It just has to happen. And I think this band has been really great with that a lot of things have been able to work with it, very limited means. We've tried to make each song have its own personality on each record and not have a whole album full of the same monotonous riffs over and over and over again. And I feel such a breath of fresh air when something like Little Ghost on this record kind of comes up, because it makes you can take a nice deep breath and feel something totally different personality.
Well, before we hear Little Ghost, would you talk a little bit about writing this song, Jack?
Yeah, I wrote this song at a friend's house in... they had to leave me to watch the house for a minute, and I wrote the song in 10 minutes, matter of fact. The idea just came out. I don't know what... I just kept thinking of this phrase, Little Ghost, and it just came out quickly. I started to think about being the only person who sees something, and maybe that's kind of the feeling you have when you're in love with somebody, that you're the only one who notices all these beautiful things about them. You know, and you kind of tell your friends, hey, isn't she great? Isn't she great? And like, yeah, she's okay, you know, but they don't see her the way you see her. You know, that sort of feeling. Almost, I just wanted to equate it with somebody that you actually could not physically see, you know, a dead person, a ghost.
Little ghost, what I'm scared of the most. Can you scare me up a little bit of love? I'm the only one that sees you, and I can't do much to please you. And it's night and time to meet the Lord above. The first moment that I met her, I did not expect the specter. When I shook her hand, I really shook the glove. She looked into me so sweetly, and we left the room discreetly. No one else could know the secret of our love. Little ghost, what I'm scared of the most. Can you scare me up a little bit of love? I'm the only one that sees you, and I can't do much to please you. And it's night and time to meet the Lord above.
That's Little Ghost from their 2005 CD, Get Behind Me, Satan.
Now, we just heard a mountain music kind of song that you wrote, Little Ghost. And you produced an album by Loretta Lynn. And it was her first solo album since the 80s, I think. Very stripped down, there's even just like a voice and guitar track on it. Mm-hmm. Why did you want to work with her?
Oh, I'm absolutely in love with Loretta Lynn. There's no doubt about it. I had been such a huge fan and was struck so hard by Coal Miner's Daughter, the movie. That's the first experience with her. And as a child, you know, and it just grew and grew and grew. And I just became so enamored with her songwriting style. I just couldn't believe, you know, what she was doing, she's sort of these doubled choruses, you know, and it was just so brilliant. And it just seemed like, how is she doing this? And I remember talking to her while we were working on the album. She's like, yeah, everyone always tells me, Jack, you know, I'll write backwards and all these things. And I think, yeah, I think you kind of do write backwards. And so clever. She's so clever and talented. I mean, like, how could I not resist that?
You know? So did you ask her to work with you?
Someone told me that, I think it was her manager, said, you know, Loretta's thinking about making, you know, maybe one final album or one more album. I said, well, you know, I said, if I can throw my name on the pile, you know, I'd love to produce it. If there's any, I figured there was no way it was going to happen. Matter of fact, I did it without a contract once it did, you know. We went down to record some demos at this guy's house in East Nashville in a home studio as well. We went down to record some demos, and Loretta had sent me 10 songs. And her daughter singing, maybe actually her daughter just recorded the demos herself on acoustic, I'm not sure. But about 10 songs she just picked off the pile of hundreds of songs she had written. And we recorded 8 of them the first day, and all 8 of those are on the album. You know, and it just, it was so special. I just couldn't believe it.
Well, I want to play one of 2 tracks, and I'll name the 2, and then you could decide which of them.
Okay.
These are my 2 favorites. One is Family Tree, and one is Miss Being Mrs.
Oh. Well, I'd have to say Miss Being Mrs., because that was really special to me, because that's just me and her playing.
Oh, that is you. I wasn't sure if that was you.
Mm-hmm. It's me playing guitar and her singing, and we just did it live. That was the second take of the song, and that was another song. I was assuming that we were going to eventually move on and maybe make it into a full band song, possibly. But after hearing that playback, it was just, it felt so good to sit in that room and play and back her up by myself. How selfish of me, you know, to take that opportunity. But it was just so wonderful.
Well, I'm glad you didn't change it. So this is Loretta Lynn with Jack White on guitar.
I lie here all alone in my bed of memories. I'm dreaming of your sweet kiss. Oh, how you loved on me. I can almost feel you with me here in this blue moonlight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. tonight. Like so many other hearts, mine wanted to be free. I've been held here every day since you've been away from me. My reflection in the mirror, it's such a hurtful sight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. tonight. Oh, I miss being Mrs. tonight. Oh, and how I love them loving arms that once held me so tight. I took off my
That's Van Leer Rose, which is an album by Loretta Lynn, produced by Jack White. That was Jack White on guitar. Jack, what was your style? How did you start to sing? Like, what came first for you, playing music, writing songs, singing?
Playing the drums came first for me, and then I needed something to play the drums to. You know, I had a little 4-track reel-to-reel in my bedroom, and, you know, so I started to teach myself how to play guitar so I could play along with something. Me and another friend I went to high school with, his name is Dominic Suchita, and we had he liked music, you know, rock and roll and all that too, so we started learning things together, and he was playing bass and stuff, so we started doing these little recordings and covering Bob Dylan songs on record and whatever, you know, I don't know, whatever we were doing, and so it kind of built up from there, and then I started to get into this band, the Flatdoor Jets, when I was a teenager. And I worked at this upholstery shop, I was apprenticed for this man named Brian Muldoon. And after we were done at work, he played drums, you know, so after we were done for the day, we would set up the drums and the guitar and we would play songs. And we were really into this two-piece band called the Flat Duo Jets, who were doing lots of kind of rockabilly and punk sort of music, but also throwing in these really gorgeous ballads, you know, from the 40s, you know, things that Patti Page and people had sung. And so I started to get more and more exposed to those kind of chord changes, I think. I started playing, you know, things like, you know, see the pyramids along the Nile, you belong to me, and things like that. And I started to get into that, those chord structures, you know, something I would not have been exposed to. And songwriting started to come out of that. And then once a couple years later, I really, really got deeply into the blues. And I think some kind of, that also sparked a little bit more of the songwriting, and it sort of opened up. And the poetry I'd been writing, or whatever I'd been writing, I don't know. And I tried, you know, I started to work it in together. I started to discover what you could do. Could you write the words first and then the music? You write the music first and the words and all that jazz. And, you know, I started throwing them together and started to, by the time me and Meg were playing the band, I think it was started to come to something interesting.
Now, Jack, you grew up in a family of like 10 kids. I think you were the youngest of 10.
Mm-hmm.
So did your brothers and sisters look after you, and did they...
Oh, boy, did they. Uh-huh. Oh, boy, did they. It's like having 10 parents.
Was that a good thing or a bad thing?
I don't know. I really don't know. I've been asking myself that my whole life. I suppose God bless them, because I love them very much, and they were always very helpful to me. And in good and bad ways, by learning, you know, when you're the youngest, you get to learn from everybody's bad example, you know. You learn how to not make the same mistakes that everyone else made. And you get a different perspective on things. My family also has a very chip on their shoulder about pride and ego, about not patting somebody on the back when they're doing so well. So it sort of makes you try harder, I think, to impress, and almost this never really satiated feeling, you know, that I was sort of never really encouraged out loud, you know. You know, it was sort of, yeah, okay, what you're doing's okay, but you could be doing it better, kind of a feeling, which kind of became a frustrating thing to me when I was a teenager, you know. It was like, forget this, man. I don't need this kind of mentality anymore. I feel good about what's happening, or whatever I'm working on, or whatever furniture or music or sculpture, whatever. And you know, I don't need this approval anymore. You know, and I think that's what really shaped me, was the letting go of that.
You mentioned, you know, you were apprenticing in an upholstery shop. Did you see your future as lying in furniture?
I don't know. I remember, you know. When I was working there, I was really into music, you know, and I would just kind of thought, it just seemed like even playing a live gig was just this impossible thing, you know. How could I ever be in a band and play a show? I didn't even think that was, it was just never going to happen, you know. Especially the current sort of the attitude in Detroit kind of doesn't make you think that, you know, you're going to have a chance. I mean, maybe in L.A. or New York and things like that, that people kind of around you sort of make me think, yeah, you maybe one day you'll get on television, even if you got the right friend, you know. But Detroit doesn't make you feel that way. And I didn't even think that I would ever be in a band, for one thing, let alone play on stage or let alone write music. And upholstery was the big sort of thing that I was doing. And I worked in a couple other shops, too, and I eventually opened my own Third Man Upholstery. I had my own studio where I worked on sculptures and did people's upholstery and antiques. And I started to, I made the big mistake of bringing, you know, a guitar to my studio and eventually not getting any work done because I was playing guitar all day long.
So were you good at this, at upholstery?
It's an extremely difficult trade, you know, and I was, I'm coming from the man I worked for, Brian Muldoon. He's sort of a super perfectionist, and he was working on mid-century modern furniture, you know, like the Ames and Jacobson and all these great designers were probably the most difficult type of upholstery to do, you know, gluing fabric directly to foam and all this jazz. So it was really hard. So I started doing these old settees and little 1800s furniture for these old ladies and things like that. And, you know, I could do that all right, but I remember going and talking to the
other upholsters at the supply place when I go and buy springs and staples and whatnot. I say, you know, how long is this going to take me before I start making money easily? And it's not a hard thing to do. And he's like, probably 8 to 10 years it took me. It's like, okay. I don't know if I got it in me, man.
Well, Jack White, Meg White, thank you so much. Congratulations on the new CD.
Thank you for having us.
Jack and Meg White speaking to Terry Gross in 2005. Their new CD release is Icky Thump. I'm David Biancooley, and this is Fresh Air.